Good afternoon. My name is Frank Catalano, and this is, so you know, book to screen, starting a story at the end. Are we all at the same spot? Great. I hope that all of you are having a great day today. Did any of you have to drive in from L.A.? Any of you from Los Angeles? None? Are most of you from this area? Anybody from out of town? Where are you from? Oh, great.
Huntington Beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Orange County.
What I'm going to do is, I'm not doing, last time I did this, I did some handouts, and I never got it straight. What I'd like to do is, if you'd like, I have some materials I can email to you. I'd be more than happy to do that. If you have any questions after the seminar that you think of, you know, when you get home or anything like that, you can email me, and I won't send you any advertising or anything like that, but if you put your name, your email address that you'd like to be contacted at, and what the seminar is, I'll be more than happy to send you guys some stuff. Well, great. I have a couple of questions before I start. Well, first of all, let me say a little bit about me, so you know who you're talking to. Then I just want to find out kind of where you all are. I've been teaching at the School of Theater at the University of Southern California for 33 years. It's hard to say. I've been there for 33 years, and I teach writing and acting and different kinds of audience things. But I'm also a writer, just like most of you are, and I have two books out right now. One is called Art of the Monologue, which is a kind of a promise I made to myself. When you teach acting, students always come up to me and go, oh, God, what monologue do I pick? Or what's a monologue? Why do I have to do a monologue? So I wrote a book. And so that's out. And then I have a new book coming out actually this month called The Creative Audience, which really kind of deals with a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. And it's really how the audience, the modern-day audience, which is who we are, actually have a kind of collaborative role in the creation of work. And I learned that very well, in which I'm going to kind of tell you a little bit more about my background. I spent quite a few years, almost a decade, as a producer-writer at Warner Brothers, movie studio, 20th Century Fox, a couple of the other ones for shorter periods of time as a consultant in development. And one of the things that I learned very early on, aside from if you have an idea, and if any of you have an idea and you go to a studio head or somebody that's in development, the first thing they're going to ask is who's attached. I mean, that's really kind of another topic. It's, you know, somebody should do a seminar on how to get, you know, Kevin Costner to star in your film. Because you can really have any idea. Once you have that, the doors start to open. So that's the first thing you learn. And the second thing you learn really very early on, and no matter how wonderful the idea you may have, they're going to say, what's the market for it? And many, many times you'll get these two criticisms. Gee, you have a wonderful idea. And notice I purposely didn't use the word script, because you may not even get that far. You may have the script in your back pocket, but you're not even there yet. You have a wonderful idea, but it probably is not going to do well in the particular market that we're trying to attract. And that's something that I always thought about. And a lot of writers today, especially television, and I spent some time on NYPD Blue. I don't know if you're familiar with that show, Ugly Betty, which is out now. Lots of animation. And what happens is, especially in television, and really to a certain extent in film, you get a sense of we're writing for a particular segment of the market. So writing for, let's say, Ugly Betty and writing for NYPD Blue are two different things. And I'm not talking about the subject matter. I'm talking about who's turning on that television. And with technology, one of the things that we're going to learn and explore is they can really tell in more specificity today on who's actually turning on the set, who's buying your book. It doesn't really stop with television and film. It even goes to your book, that it's very narrow marketing. And so what happens is it forces writers to, you have to think like a business person. You can't, it's not enough anymore to write a story and say, I've got this wonderful story and it needs to be told, or it needs to be published, or it needs to be developed. They don't care. You could have proof of extraterrestrial life and they'll pass on your project. I mean, you can have like glossy 8, but they don't care. Right now in this market, how is it going to do? So I kind of picked that up as I went. So I spent some time and continue to work as a writer, and I do consultancy work now. But I did the major studio thing, and I can answer any questions about how that works. I'm this is kind of a longer introduction than I wanted to do. I was enamored when I went to Warner Brothers. I loved the history of that studio. I came from a smaller studio called Lorimar, which was a television studio primarily. When they bought us, I went to Lorimar, and I was like a child at a candy store, and I learned very quickly that the same sound stages where Betty Davis and Humphrey Bogart and all those people, it was a very different company then. It was much, it's a business. And once you start getting into that mindset, it makes writer, especially writers, have a kind of in-focus understanding of what they're getting into. Now, I have a question for you. How many of you are screenwriters? Because I know this is a fiction conference. Any of you have screenplays that you're working on? Any of you have novels? Okay, good. So everybody here, good. This makes it easy. And have any of you thought about converting your novel into a screenplay? Okay. And it's I think it's a great thing to do. If you sell your book and that sale is including screen rights, it's always nice to have it. You know, it's something that's there, and if you have representation, they will look upon it as a positive thing. And then the other thing is, I guess, off topic of this seminar, is that you've got to be willing to let the child go, because a lot of times they'll buy your book and then they'll hire somebody else to write your story. You say, I've got a screenplay, it's right here. And they say, well, yeah, I know, but he's done like 3 or 4 movies that have got big grosses, so we're giving it to him. And they may even pay you for the screenplay, at which point you sell all your rights and then somebody else rewrites it, and you may not even get a credit for it. That's just the way it goes. But what's this idea of writing a story at the end? Why did I want to do something like this? And I wanted to frame this presentation to what does it mean when you saw this and it said writing your story at the end, what did you think it meant?
Well, yes? When I was writing the plot story for my book, I kept visualizing it. Oh, geez, it'd be great on the screen. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of hoping maybe you were talking that way, that as you're writing the original novel, to think of it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, in a way I am.
Okay.
But I want you to think about when we buy something, and all of us, we're all consumers, probably less consumers now than before with nobody has any money. But when you buy something, and now specifically, I was just talking to somebody outside. You know, people are very careful now on when they make expenditures. I saw this wonderful play in Los Angeles called Minsky's. It's just opened. And it's great. It's going to Broadway. And it's a great show. And, you know, to buy seats are $80 or whatever. I'm sure they are, to get an orchestra seat. And you'd say, oh, well, I really want to make sure that it's good before I spend $160 for 2 seats or whatever. And that's part of this, starting at the end. The other part of it is, when we buy something, if you buy toothpaste, you say, wait a minute, we're talking about writing. If you're buying toothpaste, you're buying a car, whatever it is, do you think about the process of the car, or do you think about the end? When you, any of you, yeah, you want to be with a, you want to be driving that convertible down the street, you want whiter teeth, you want stronger muscles, longer hair, whatever it may be. And I thought to myself, let's think about this in terms of writing, and how many of you, we're all writers, and we all go home and we open up those laptops and we slug away. And then you have those little moments when every once in a while somebody says, you know what? I like that idea. And then you have that 30 seconds or 1 minute of this could be it. And I say, well, how do we do that? And we can think in terms of this for screenwriting, in terms of three things. Three frames for it. One, you could do, you come into an office and you have what's called a pitch. And that's what I was describing before. Your screenplay, your novel, it might be read by somebody who does coverage. So, you know, Mr. or Ms. producer hires somebody to read your material and they do a one or two page coverage. They don't look at your book, ever. I mean, maybe there's a few out there, but they'll do coverage on it and there'll be a couple of bullet points. So you go into a meeting and you have your script or you've submitted your script and you have your book, and but you're not even, they're dusty. They're in the, they're saying, this is a pitch session. Pitch me your concept in a minute. And sometimes they don't say a minute. They'll say, just pitch, you know, it's got to be quick. It can't be, well, once upon a time, there were three bears. They go, oh, no, no, no. What happens? And you say, well, you know what? I got a kid locked in a house, three bears. You know, you're going to the end of the story, and then you go back. So that's the pitch. So you're in a very truncated, short-form, non-literary, you hate every minute of it moment you get to tell your story. And it just totally boils it down to the lowest common denominator it could possibly be. That's one frame. The other frame for starting your story at the end is the script itself, where you actually sit down, or a book, and you open it. Thank you. You open it at the end, or close to it. And I'm going to go in familiar territory. We have always been, as you know, in school and learning narrative structure and all the things we do, it's, you know, once upon a time, from when we were the littlest kids, that there were the three bears or there's this story. And then the story, you take two characters or more, or one character, and they go through the story, and through traditional forms of exposition, you find out little pieces about them, and then it leads to the, what the English teachers will tell you, you know, the climax, the resolution, and everybody goes home. Well, guess what? Along comes the internet and cell phone, seeing movies on cell phones, and we live in a very visual world. And as a college professor, do any of you teach? What do you teach?
ESL.
Okay.
Oh, I was teaching vocational education.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you teach?
Business continuity disaster.
Okay. But I teach theater, I teach humanities, I teach about painting and sculpture and acting. And let me tell you what I've observed in the many years I've been teaching. A student might come to me, let's take acting. They don't really care about how to act. They just want to know, how do I be a star? That's the end. See, they don't care about... And I had a student come up to me and he said, well, you know, I'm good looking, I got the muscles and everything, I want to make $5 million or, you know, $10 million an episode or whatever. Everyone is concerned with the end result. They're not concerned with the process. And you say, but I want to tell you, let's go back to your writing. I want to tell you about this character. You know, he or she goes through this process and then they reach this epiphany. Yeah, okay. What, tell me, give me the bottom line here. So how do we, you know, we talked about in a pitch session, that's easy. You can write a narrative. You could write, Gone with the Wind, that would be a hard sell today.
Yeah.
It's a period movie, you know, and you're talking about this sprawl, and they're going, oh, and somebody be, you know, oh, we got to burn Atlanta. Sorry. All right? It would be a hard, so, and that's some of the other things I'm going to talk about today in audience, but let's talk about you, because you're the most important thing. So what do? So in your pitch session, it's very easy to boil it down to the end. You have, as a writer, can play with your story any which way in a pitch. You're saying, I'm going to tell you about this, and I'm going to put it right here, and then I'll fill you in later. You can do that. But now, let's say you don't have the pitch session. You know, how many of you sent your manuscripts to some third party that you don't know, and there it is. And you know what they do? I shouldn't be hitting this. When you, in the script end of it, and you tell me about the fiction. And I've got two books under my belt now, so maybe next year I'll be able to say more. I've got a third one coming out. But this is what they do in screenwriting. Here's my script, and they go like this. They look at the last page first. What do they want to know? How many pages? And they're saying, oh, it's 120 pages, it's filming, it's a page a minute. Okay, that'll work. Now, I've seen some writers, and that's assuming you're doing, you know, appropriate font and format, you know. They're writing 140 pages, you know, in Times New Roman. They look at that and they go, oh, that's too long. And they haven't even written a word. But what I'm talking about, what I'm talking about starting a story at the end in writing is you take that pivotal moment, whichever, the most dramatic moment, the Titanic sinking, or even better, the Titanic hitting the iceberg. You take that very moment, you go, oh, wait a minute, you can't do that. Because if they know the type, everybody knows it's going to sink. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. So you start your story then. And then through your writing, be it a novel, be it a screenplay, be it an interstitial, with the internet now, you can write interstitial stuff. You peel out the story, but you hook them right there on page one. Oh, my God, an ocean liner sinking. Well, let's say it is the Titanic. You might be thinking, oh, come on, that's horrible. Because then what are you going to do? And say, well, this is the Titanic. Well, everybody knows it sinks. You go, maybe not. Maybe not this time. Do you ever think about those stories we all know, like King Kong? Wouldn't you like for once in your life for him to live? Yeah. Why can't that be written? So there's no rule that says you have to write the story. So you're starting them at a pivotal point, and it's that same attraction that when I was on the 405, when somebody has an accident, everybody stops to look. You say, why are you stopping? It's on the other side of the road. I got to get to this thing. And everybody wants to see. They all want that pivotal moment. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. And here it is. And I kind of know the answer, but I'm going to ask you. How many of you, and it's probably a relative, when you ask them, how was your day? And then they go, like my brother, this stays in this room. My brother, you say, hey, what's going on? You know, how are you? He's, oh, I got up, and you know, then I brushed my teeth, and then I did this, and then I did that. You don't want to ask him how he is. When you say, how was your day, or what's going on, what do you really mean? Hi. You know, that's my guy right there. That's what I mean. But some people may say, give me the highlight. You know, give me a couple of little bullet points here of what you think is important, and I'll make my own judgment about your day. You don't want every single bit of fact. And the truth be known, not all facts are of equal importance in a given moment in time. So the same thing happens to us. We're taught by, in English class and in writing classes, to write these intricate plots, and it's all beautiful. Believe me, I've written, you know, there's so many things been written, and so many things pull us in, and it's like a slow roll. Even you take a writer like Michael Crichton, the late Michael Crichton, his books, you know, the original, not the movie, but the book opens up with a little kid playing on the thing, and, you know, little by little you learn about the dinosaurs and all of that. It's wonderfully written. But you know how that script got made? There was an interview of Steven Spielberg, and you know what the pitch was? Dinosaurs, period. They come back. That was it. And Spielberg said, you know, for the original, I'm in. Dinosaurs, they come back. Or something to that effect. So you see what he started at the end, you know, not necessarily the end, but so far, now you're committed, and all that other stuff about the amber and the, you know, all the stuff becomes the reason to get to that. So getting back to my brother. So when my brother starts telling me everything, I just say, you know, give me the facts. I wish I could just record him and then pick out the important things and then listen and then make my judgment. That's what we do by starting at the end. You say, this is it. Dinosaurs, they come back, and they go, okay, I'm here, I'm with you. Then you pull out of this whole story, this novel you've written, the screenplay, those specific elements which feed into that storyline. So you don't have to tell the whole story. You don't need to have the whole arc. You begin at the end, and you hook them to this kind of promise, I guess. And another element, it's a promise. If I say to you, I feel like I'm hiding behind this thing. It's big. It's probably alive. If you say dinosaurs, they come back. That's a promise. We're making a promise to the reader, and I'm talking about the fact where we as writers have no control. You're not in the pitch session now. This is in the pitch session. You're like, you know, running with the football, so you can move around and you can elaborate. Now you're submitting your script, and so you got to hook them. I'm doing a thing tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow. Yeah, it is tomorrow. That'd be tomorrow. On the first 10 pages, you know, and everybody writes stuff about that. It's the same thing. This reader that they're paying X amount of dollars to read your script, you gotta hook them really early on, and it's symptomatic of the times we live in. And my students, I see it. They want everything, and as teachers, those of you teachers, you gotta change your mode of presentation every 7 minutes. Otherwise, they're gone. They're texting, iPodding, whatever they do. It's immediate gratification. Now, am I suggesting that we become a bunch of mindless, you know, forget all the rules of literature? No. What I am suggesting is that we learn how to camouflage ourselves in this world. We still write the book. The book is exactly the same. You're just reordering it a little bit to pull these people in. And once you have them, you can take your time developing the story. You can have dinosaurs and amber go here. You know, as a lot of you, a novel, in a piece of good fiction, you can introduce characters. But they're already on the bus with you. The hard part is getting them to get on the bus. Once they're on, you're okay. It's that first initial beginning. So that's why I say start at the end. And let me throw a couple of other curveballs at you. Starting at the end for theater, for example, might be one thing. Are any of you written plays? Okay. You know, the language of theater is it's more eloquent than perhaps, it's like literature, it's more eloquent. You have a little more time to roll things out. And in film, you got 10 pages. That's it. If you're writing a screenplay, you got to do it in the first 10 pages. And think about your first 10 minutes of your feature film. You're sitting up there. You want to know. It isn't like we sit there saying, well, I don't know, 10, first 10 pages. No, it's not that. But you, in the first 10 minutes of the film, you want to pretty much know who the major characters are, a little bit about who they are that's important to what you're about to see, and perhaps some unique thing that might be evident about the story. So I just saw, I've seen pretty much everything now, all these nominated movies. The Reader, any of you see The Reader? Now The Reader, I had a little problem with The Reader in that it was marketed one way, but that's kind of another topic. It was marketed as kind of like this Nazi thing, and it really wasn't about that. But in the first 3 minutes of the film, the kid was getting sick, I don't want to tell you all, but the two major characters are thrust together within the first 10 minutes of the movie, and you get a pretty good idea of what, and then how, then they get you to move on. The Slum Dog, any of you see that? Yeah, I mean, it starts at the end.
Yeah.
He's in the, can I say this? He's in the police station, I'm not giving anything away. And then you find out the rest before, and only the important parts to the story. And so that's how you have to think. That you have to think almost like, oh God, I will be struck by lightning. Not a salesman, you do. You have to sell your idea, and you say, you mean to the producer? No, to the reader and the viewer. And it really gets crazy if you write television. Because television is segmented. So you've all heard the term the teaser. So in NYPD Blue, we would always have that little teaser. You know, the dead body, you know, some of the teasers weren't very much teasers, but they would always have something, and Dennis Franz would go, well, what do you got? Well, you got this, Sarge, you know, this look, and, you know, this looks like another case for what the squad, and then it'd go, bum, 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 NYPD Blue. And CSI does it all the time. they have that little thing, and then they actually turn, you know, into the camera. So you have to write in little, it would be like me saying to you, write your story, but you got to write it in these little, tiny, very specific blocks, because there are acts in television. And then, have any of you ever heard of the term interstitial? All right, in film. So sometimes, let's say all of you can go out today. In fact, we can't do it. There's no time. You can sell your idea on the internet. Internet's an easy sale. Your book, an idea, a weight loss program, whatever. It's easy. Well, it's not that easy, but it's easy. Easier. And you would then have to tell your story in very specific little blocks. So think of your novels as meals. It's now chicken Tuscany. And it's, here it is, here's a pea, piece of carrot. And that's how you sell, that's how you're thinking, how it has to be written. So you have to look at your story and find ways to block it out in little tiny things that people can press buttons on in the internet and it goes up. But it has to be small. It's almost like a mosaic. Probably an more artistic way of describing it would be a mosaic. But it's kind of like eating chicken Tuscany a pea at a time. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But, it's frustrating, and that's the challenge, to be able to come up with that, to say, okay, we love your idea, come up with 100 one-minute segments. Now, you got to take your idea, and it's not as easy as I'm going to start here and just cut it, because sometimes it doesn't fit right. It's got to, every minute, let's say I arbitrarily selected a minute, every minute has to have its own beginning, middle, and end. So it gets crazy. But it's good. It's fun. I mean, it's doable. It's doable. So starting at the end creates an interest, and you have to write for the medium. So if you're writing for literature, that's going to... Starting at the end in literature may be different than starting at the end in cinema. And the other thing I think is important, and I'm sure this sounds cliche, but I have to say it. When you're writing, we said we got to keep in mind the audience. But you ever hear that expression that says, well, show it, don't tell it? Don't you get tired of that? I love writing great dialogue. My characters sometimes are a little chatty. But I, you know...